proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. This is the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. This is your host, Aaron Broughton, and I want to welcome you to today's program. Perhaps no other subject in recent history challenges our minds so much as the horrors of the Holocaust. Now, in the modern city of Jerusalem, there is a very special memorial dedicated to the remembrance of the Shoah, also known as the Holocaust. Yad Vashem stands today as a lesson to never forget the horrors of anti-Semitism, as well as a monument for courage, survival in the face of evil. Yad Vashem presents the Holocaust from a unique Jewish perspective, especially in its 4,200 square meter complex within the museum complex itself. Now, upon entering the museum at Yad Vashem, you are brought into Jewish life in Europe from the 1930s before World War II. Next, you are encountered with the first signs of persecution in places such as Estonia and Lithuania. As you continue winding your way through the museum, you will encounter several exhibits that mark the anti-Semitism that Jewish people faced in Europe by the Nazis as well as other groups. All these actions led to the systematic identification, deportation, and eventual slaughter of millions of Jewish people, political dissidents, as well as others. Yad Vashem gives you a great sense of the timeline of events that took place in the 1940s in Nazi-controlled Europe. The suffering of the Jewish people is presented by artifacts, personal stories of the Holocaust survivors. This journey includes exhibits of the death marches, the Warsaw Ghetto, as well as various concentration camps and the eventual freedom and move to Israel. As you get ready to exit the museum, you will see a beautiful tree-filled valley in Jerusalem. This is a living reminder that even though the past was horrific, there is a bright hope and a future ahead. Another place that is very special on these grounds is the Hall of Remembrance. As you walk in, you will see the building with walls of stones with a concrete top. Now, between these two is a natural light that comes in. The meaning of this is that as the evil of the Holocaust oppressed the Jewish people, there was hope. Now, inside the Hall of Remembrance, you will see the floor with the names of the concentration camps along with the eternal flame. Now, dignitaries and heads of state will often come and lay a wreath at this site during the visit. Now, it's interesting about the eternal flame. There's only been one time that the eternal flame ever went out. And that was some years ago when the German Minister of Defense came for an official visit. He looked over at the eternal flame and he asked, well, how does this thing work? And he flipped the switch and it went out. Kind of ironic how that came about, but that's the only time there. But moving on, there's no other so moving a memorial as the Children's Memorial at Yad Vashem. The haunting yet captivating atmosphere of this building captures your attention in a strong way. Upon entering the memorial, you are faced with pictures of children who perished in the concentration camps. As you continue walking, you will see a myriad of candles and hear the names of each child, their age, and where they were from, spoken in English as well as Hebrew. It is truly a sobering experience. Although we remember the tragic loss of 6 million Jews who perished in the Holocaust, we also remember those who stood up for the persecuted. Now, at Yad Vashem, you can visit a beautiful and living memorial to those called the Righteous Among the Nations there at the museum. Now, today, there are over 24,000 people from 44 countries that are officially recognized by the organization. During World War II, several helped Jewish people and other people groups that were affected by the Nazis. Now, some may have given food, while others may have provided temporary lodging to those in flight. The memorial in Jerusalem reflects those who have put their lives on the line in an effort to save Jewish lives. Now, some of the people remembered here are Oscar Schindler, Irina Sendler, as well as Corrie Ten Boom. Now, Edmund Burke once said, "All that is necessary for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing." In light of the tragedy of the Holocaust, I pray that we will stand up for truth and the protection of innocent lives. As we leave the Holocaust Memorial at Yad Vashem, let us remember the lessons that we have learned today. May God help us never to forget. Let's now turn our attention to Jewish believer Mark Oshman with today's Bible lesson.
Thank you for joining this broadcast. We've been studying the 11th chapter of Hebrews and the Hebrews Hall of Fame. In our last segment, we looked at the faith of Abel, Enoch, and Noah. In this portion, we will look at the faith of Abraham. In addition, we'll look at the faith of Abraham's wife, Sarah, when it came to the conception of Isaac. Abraham descended from Shem, a son of Noah. He grew up in Ur of the Chaldees, a location that corresponded to modern-day southeast Iraq. Almost one quarter of the book of Genesis dealt with the life of Abraham. However, the Bible revealed nothing about him until he had turned 75. Three of the major world religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. Three of the major world religions esteem Abraham. Islam regards Abraham as a prophet. Judaism considers him the father of the Jewish nation. Christianity sees Abraham as a model of faith for believers to emulate. This is the position adopted by the author of Hebrews. He described Jesus Christ as taking on himself the seed of Abraham, according to the second chapter of Hebrews. In the sixth chapter of Hebrews, the author depicted Abraham as the recipient of divine promises. He described Abraham as being a patriarch in Hebrews chapter number 7. Other New Testament writers also alluded to Abraham. Stephen, in his speech in Acts chapter 7, spoke of Abraham. Paul in Romans chapter 4, James in James chapter 2 called Abraham our father. In Romans chapter 9 and 2 Corinthians chapter 11, Paul described himself as coming from the seed of Abraham. God himself called Abraham a prophet and the friend of God. He affirmed that, quote, Abraham will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, unquote. In the 26th chapter of Genesis, God later commended Abraham for, quote, having obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws, unquote. In Hebrews chapter 11, the author commenced his dissertation on Abraham by remarking, quote, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should have to receive for an inheritance, obeyed, and he went out not knowing whither he went, unquote. That reference pointed back to an event that took place in Ur of the Chaldees. According to the 12th chapter of Genesis, God then instructed Abraham, quote, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee, unquote. He also promised to make a great nation out of Abraham's progeny, and that the whole world would reckon themselves blessed through Abraham. The patriarch complied with God's order. Abraham left Ur, taking with him his wife Sarah and his nephew Lot, as well as various servants. They traveled to Canaan, first heading northwest along the Euphrates River to the city of Haran, before turning southwest to go to Canaan, a journey that extended for approximately 800 or 900 miles. Abraham's compliance with God's command illustrated a maxim that Solomon would later propound in Proverbs chapter 3. Quote, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths, unquote. When God first told Abraham to leave Ur of the Chaldees, he didn't inform the patriarch where that journey would end. Abraham nonetheless obeyed God, leaving his extended family and homeland at God's request. The author of Hebrews then continued his narrative about Abraham. Quote, by faith he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, unquote. Though God had promised Abraham territory for an inheritance, the patriarch spent the remainder of his life in Canaan without ever enjoying that particular bequest. Indeed, perhaps the only land that Abraham ever actually owned was a burial plot for his wife Sarah that he purchased from Ephron the Hittite. So, for the final 100 years of his life, Abraham dwelt in the land of promise, a land promised to him, but he dwelt there as a stranger and as a pilgrim. What motivated Abraham to adopt such a lifestyle? The writer of Hebrews explained that Abraham, quote, looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God, unquote. Abraham saw beyond the details of his mundane existence as a wandering nomad. He realized that this world did not constitute his home. That realization strengthened him during the travails he experienced. He could put up with difficulties on earth because of the glorious future that awaited him in heaven. Abraham acknowledged that even though God had promised him land, he, Abraham, did not really own anything. Everything belonged to God. According to Psalm 24, quote, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, unquote. In Genesis 14, Abraham as much as admitted that, when he referred to God as, quote, the possessor of heaven and earth, unquote. The author of Hebrews further cited an incident that took place after the birth of his son Isaac. Quote, by faith Abraham, when he was tried, offered up Isaac, and he that had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, that in Isaac shall thy seed be called, unquote. In the 22nd chapter of Genesis, God told Abraham to take Isaac, go to the land of Moriah, and offer Isaac as a burnt offering. Abraham knew that any sacrifice rendered as a burnt offering belonged entirely to God. Thus, he fully expected to kill Isaac at Moriah. Nevertheless, Abraham obeyed God. When Abraham's party arrived at the site, the patriarch told his servants, quote, abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship and come again to you, unquote. Though Abraham did fully intend to slay his son, he still expected the two of them, Abraham and Isaac, to return to the men after the burnt offering had taken place. The writer of Hebrews explained Abraham's underlying rationale for this belief. Quote, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, unquote. This, of course, referred to Isaac. Abraham fully expected to kill Isaac, but he also fully expected God to raise Isaac again from the dead. The patriarch had no reason to believe God would do this. He simply trusted that God could do this. In other words, he left the matters in God's hands. God responded to Abraham's act of faith by preventing him from killing Isaac. Furthermore, God confirmed the promises he made to Abraham, adding this, quote, in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies, unquote. Abraham lived in an age when idolatry prevailed, yet he himself remained faithful to the true God. He spent his life among those who adhered to a corrupted culture, yet he himself did not assimilate into that environment. Therefore, Abraham served as a model for Christians to emulate. Since Christians are strangers and pilgrims on this earth, they, like Abraham, should not reckon themselves citizens of this life, but should seek a better world to come. That is to say, live for eternity in heaven. The author of Hebrews also included Sarah as an example of faith. Quote, through faith also, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised, unquote. At first glance, this assessment seemed to contradict the Old Testament narrative. In the 18th chapter of Genesis, when God first informed Abraham about Isaac's impending birth, the text records, quote, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? Unquote. She even attempted to dispute with God when he called her out about the matter. Sarah seemed to react to the announcement of Isaac's birth with skepticism, not with faith. Why then did the writer of Hebrews include Sarah in his chapter as an example of faith? The account in Genesis need not contradict that of Hebrews. Genesis 18 describes Sarah's initial reaction to God's pronouncement of the birth. By the time Isaac's birth actually occurred, though, Sarah showed a different perspective. Quote, God hath made me to laugh, so that all that hear will laugh with me, unquote. Her initial doubts apparently gave way to her innate trust in God. Sarah ultimately then embraced the promise of God. In the words of Hebrews, quote, she received strength to conceive seed, unquote. Even so, she was too old to bear a child. When God asked her, quote, is there anything too hard for the Lord, unquote, Sarah evidently took that inquiry to heart. She believed that God would perform what he promised to do. Because of that, she deserved to be included in the 11th chapter of Hebrews as an example of faith. We thank you for listening to this program. Please come back for future broadcasts about the Hebrews Hall of Fame.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee, 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.